Good morning, sports fans! And are you excited, Los Angeles? Are you all across the Southland on your feet, on your toes, and just all together elated today? Are you? Because if you had witnessed this thrilling, classic, not pretty, but good Game 7 between the LA Lakers and the Boston Celtics, won by the hometown crew, the Lakers show at Staples Center, 83-79, on a fair Thursday night in Los Angeles, then you, of course, are among many people out there who are very happy to see the Lakers get their 16th championship and their third over the Boston Celtics. So we welcome you again to another edition of the Dave in the City podcast, coming to you direct from West LA, where we did not have any rocks thrown at us, thank goodness. And we broadcast to you on a very unusual day, Saturday, which doesn't really mean much because, thankfully, we will get this thing. You can listen to this anytime you want to. But we're publishing at a very unusual time. I couldn't do a show yesterday. I was in the moment. I was elated. I was talking to 100 people last night, and I was celebrating. I was not going to have a good show. It would have just been an improper time. So I wanted some time to think about it, and I've thought about it, and I'm ready to go. So we'll get to that. Well, we're going to get into all the details, but it won't be a very long podcast today. I just want to just go over the basics. There was no need to go over stats. You know, that thing's been played. You know, it's been a really great last 72 hours, I think. You go from being assured, or I do, go from being assured that the Lakers are going to blow a championship run, you go from thinking for sure that there's no way that the Celtics would avoid getting their 18th, to the Lakers standing tall on the podium, accepting the Larry O'Brien trophy, and Kobe, on his part, receiving an MVP trophy from Bill Russell, the face of the Celtics for the first 25 years, at least. What a moment. What a moment to see the Celtics get their revenge, to see the Boston fans and media get their comeuppance, to all the callers who went in and said, "Oh, yeah, we're going to put this away in front of the weak LA fans." This is revenge. This is vindication. Or, as they printed on the t-shirts, redemption. And it's in bold letters on hats on stores across America. Redemption and repetition. Let's just say repeat for the LA Lakers, winning back-to-back champions, which is basically something that's lost in all this. It's a back-to-back championship for the LA Lakers as they win, again, 83-79 in a very hard-fought Game 7. Again, I'm Dave Medina coming to you from LA, where the fervor is all over. You know, I was coming home tonight from my usual day job, riding the long ride in the bus. Actually, traffic was fine, but there was a cop car with a Laker flag on it. A cop car. That tells you the reach that the Lakers have in this city. A cop car has a Laker flag on it. You don't see this in any other city in America unless someone were to tell me different. And if you do, you can always reach us at daveinthecity.podbean.com. But that's just outrageous. But in a good way. I mean, the Lakers galvanize a people like no other. Although, as part of that, the unfortunate downside to this is it also galvanizes people to damage, to riot, to be a hooligan. No good. No good. And last night was no different than it has been in previous years. And there were lots of damage. There were broken car windows. There were beaten up persons. Well, one person. And there was a taxi cab that went up in flames. Yeah. Yeah. Not a good display from the people of LA, but I have been saying that if you put a stadium, if you have a championship game and have a huge gathering in close proximity to South Central and East LA, things don't have a great probability of turning out well. Two traditionally, well, at least in terms of South Central, a traditionally bad part of town, let's say, a rough and tumble part of town, a place where, you know, things can happen that are a little shady, but not to say that it's anybody's fault. It's not the city's fault, but the odds are usually not too good when you get that, when you get anything involved in a, you know, more or less seedy part of town. But past that, the damage is done, and the Lakers have emerged victorious. Damage is done in several areas, also on the basketball court, where in the first half, neither team could shoot. But in particular, Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol were really having a rough go in the early going. In that first half, Ron Artest really stepped up and kept the Lakers in the game. And many could say that he single-handedly kept them in reach. Then, in the second half, the Celtics did not buckle. They actually extended the lead to 11 and then to 13. And let me tell you, I panicked. I have to be honest. I panicked. I couldn't believe it. I was nervous. I texted a lot of people and said that this is it. It's over. Forget it. No chance. Celtics, 13 points, all that experience. Third quarter, a quarter and a half left. I really didn't think that the Lakers could come back, but they did. And did they do it with a big run? No. Did they do it with Kobe Bryant leading the way? No. Did they have a fluke play? No. They did it with their resolve and their defense. Not only that, but timely baskets, timely shooting from some of the people that you would expect, such as Derek Fisher, who had the three-pointer to tie the game at 64, and some you don't. A guy who normally shoots the ball all the time and doesn't make it, Ron Artest, took those shots in rhythm and made many of them on Thursday night. And Artest was just so smooth. And it happened when he had the confidence and the endorsement of Coach Phil Jackson about a week ago. Once that went down, Ron Artest felt like he could deliver, and he did. And just when the team needed him most. And it was really, really timely because Kobe did not deliver last night from the offensive side of the court. He was terrible. He was really just quite awful. And, you know, he shot maybe 30%, maybe 28%. He was pathetic from the field. But he had 15 rebounds as well, and the Lakers as a team were great on the glass, offensively and otherwise. Their rebounding was terrific. And Pau Gasol had 18 rebounds on the night. And it just goes to show that the Celtics did, in fact, miss Kendrick Perkins. But you can't cry over spilled milk at this point because the Celtics did have a 13-point lead. And at that juncture, it was a war of it was just a battle to see who could outlast the other. Who was going to have the stamina to not let up? And as it turned out, the Lakers were the ones who emerged victorious. It wasn't pretty. It was an ugly game. Probably one of the worst scoring games in NBA Finals history. Maybe the worst in a Game 7. Shooting percentages, nobody really shot over 40%. It was just not a good shooting night all the way around. But sometimes bad shooting nights don't equate bad games. And this is one of those cases. It just was a terrific game to watch. Both teams had so much intensity in this thing. Both teams, you knew, had so much on the line, and they played like it. They, you know, these guys get paid millions of dollars, but they fought tooth and nail for this trophy, for this championship, for the pride of their city, and really, in some ways, for the pride of the entire coast. Celtics representing the East, LA representing the West, a conflagration between two opposite parts of the country. It was phenomenal. And I tell you, it's just been a thrill, these six games plus one more. And I tell you what else. I mean, the Lakers, when they came out at the end with the lead and the victory, It was really just something to watch. Kobe never really regained his form. He never really got his shooting touch back. But he did get two free throws towards the end that really helped control the game, put it away. But more importantly, two shots near the end of the game, actually three, made the Lakers really put the foot on the neck of the Celts. One was a Ron Artest three-pointer with exactly a minute left to go in the game. What that did to the crowd, you could sense it even all the way across your TV screen. You could feel the vibes even though you were nowhere near that building watching it on TV. Ron Artest three-pointer absolutely brought everybody out of their seats. They yelped and jumped and screamed, did the fans. And it was just that signature moment. When the Lakers or anybody closes out a big game in a big series and you're at home, there's always that signature moment that just takes the crowd and makes it explode. Like popcorn kernels coming out of the kettle. Everything just exploded at once. As if, I don't know, a reservoir that was putting pressure on a dam. Perhaps a bottle of soda that had been shaken up with the bottle cap not taken off. That sort of thing. The pressure was mounting. And then, boom! It exploded. Every single person in the building jumped up and yelled for joy. And those moments will happen in every series. You know? Just think back about 10 years. When Kobe Bryant had a long alley-oop to Shaquille O'Neal to put the Lakers up 6 after being down 13 to start the fourth quarter. Insane, is it not? But that was the signature moment in that game. And how about the signature moments in other events? Perhaps the signature moment, let's see. With Michael Jordan getting the ball to Steve Kerr, 1997, against the Utah Jazz, Game 6. It was a tough game. Utah was up by a bunch of points. Then the Bulls came back, and it was tough and rough and tumble until the end. Tie game. Kerr nails the shot with only a minute or two left, and the crowd goes nuts. Signature moment. And here this week, Ron Artest getting that three-pointer. Signature moment. I mean, you could feel it. That's about the time where the fans really sensed that they were on their way to getting number 16 in Laker franchise history in terms of championships. Wow. Although after that shot, the Celtics answered with a three on the other end as quickly as Ron Artest's shot went in. So it was never truly over until at last, after a back and forth and to and fro, and two clutch free throws by Sasha Vujacic, and those are the other two clutch shots, the Celtics inbounded the ball. They tried for three, didn't make it. And then Gasol, if I recall correctly, gets it to Odom, who just throws it into the other side of the court, gingerly enough so that the time can casually expire. Kobe Bryant catches up with it, raises his fist in the air, and the Lakers win the championship for 2010. What a moment. And I was on my feet a good part of that fourth quarter with our good friend Andrew Jacobson, who will not be here to comment on the game tonight. He was just so distraught. He wanted so badly for the Celtics to win. I mean, I was listening, sitting here watching this game with him, and he, you know, when they went up by 13, he really could feel. He really thought that this was going to happen. And I really thought it was going to happen, too. I couldn't take it. I had to leave. I went outside by the balcony, and I just had to take some deep breaths. I slammed the door. You know, it was rough. I mean, it did not look good. It didn't. Because you know that the Celtics have done this sort of things before, where they go up in a certain number of points. And usually, in cases where they need to close out, they do, but the Lakers' defense throughout the whole game was playing so well, you had to figure that eventually they were going to make some kind of a push. And they did, but it was a really gradual push. It was never any big run like, you know, you often will see in basketball. You know, they didn't have like big old plays where they went on like some 6-0 run. They did kind of go on a bit of a run in the third or was it the fourth quarter. But it didn't really come out cohesively, so to speak. You didn't have, like, 3 three-pointers in a row or anything like that. That's kind of what I'm getting at. But the Lakers did it with their resolve. And I tell you, the Celtics, they didn't have Perkins, but they were definitely in position to win that game. And really, they just got worn out. It was a sign of an old, aging team. And it was a sign of a team that had played a lot of playoff games. And it was a sign of a team that really looked like it had their chance and blew it. But believe it or not, their chance wasn't even in games in this game. It wasn't any part of this game at all. Their chance was 2 days earlier in Game 6. And the Celtics completely punted it. Because of this, I feel like a lot of bad things happened. First, Perkins' injury, which knocks him out for Game 7 entirely. A big reason why I think the Celtics lost the game. Second, it gives the Lakers motivation and hope. And third, you're up 3-2. You win Game 6 and you got this thing sealed already. I was amazed at how flat the Celtics came out for Game 6. I really was. And I'm like, when you have a chance to do something and finish something, you gotta finish. You see examples of teams who see the moment and seize the moment. And you could even go within this, the context of this basketball, this playoff season. The Lakers, for example. Their first opportunity to clinch every series, they capitalized. Going to the first round, their first chance to close out a game, Game 6 at Oklahoma City. They did it. Now, it wasn't easy. It took a miracle tip-in by Pau Gasol to do it, but they did it. Second round, they're already up 3-0 at Utah. They have every reason to just lay up and just relax and then wait to go back home for Game 5. They didn't. They took care of business, and they creamed the Utah Jazz at the Energy Solutions Arena by like 25 points. An impressive display by the Lakers. So they took care of business in that round when they had a chance to close out. They're 2-for-2. And then against the Suns, despite the fact that it was as back and forth as you can get, the Lakers won Game 5 again on another miracle by Ron Artest, a tip-in at the buzzer, no less, to bring them up 3-2. Game 6, the Lakers did not take any chances. They stormed the Suns in the second quarter, went up a bunch of points. Phoenix made a run, but the Lakers totally put that thing away with the help of some clutch baskets by Kobe Bryant. So that entered us into Game 6, where the Celtics had a chance to do something just as the Lakers had done throughout the playoffs. But then you look at the Celtics' situation in their closeout games throughout the first round. Game 4 against the Heat, a team that had no business even being in the playoffs, and the Celtics just did not do it defensively. They just let Dwayne Wade have his way. He scored like 50 points, and the Heat spoiled any opportunity for the Celtics to put this thing away in 4. They had to go all the way back to Boston and take care of them in Game 5, and that was not an easy trip either. That was not a decisive game by any stretch. Second round. That was the famous Cavaliers series. This is the only series where they actually closed out when they had a chance. They went up 3-2, Game 6, boom, they took care of it. Good game. But the Celtics eventually pulled away in the fourth quarter. And then the one that really gets me is when they were at Orlando, they jumped ahead 3-0. They lost back-to-back games, including a whopper over at Orlando, to have to force all these extra trips to go back to Boston in order to finish the thing for good in Game 6. Not a good showing by the Boston Celtics. And it's not even something that they've only done this year. They've never been able to close out games throughout the course of their playoff runs in, I don't know, the last 2-3 years. That's what's crazy about it. So, it's not surprising that the Boston Celtics went into this Game 6 with a really laid-back attitude. And that was a mistake, I think. Because they let up, I think the Celtics blew their chance at a championship there. People will point at the fourth quarter in Game 7. People point at the third quarter. People point at the injury. But all that stuff may have been different if the Celtics seized the moment, and they did not. And that is why I think they are sitting home wondering, what if? What if that we had just done it in Game 6? What if we could have just put them away there and then? What if we could have done it? Wouldn't Perkins have been around for that game? It's too late, but that's just what can kill you if you're a Celtics player. And if you're a Celtics fan, I imagine the same feeling persists. So, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes it's just a matter of will, resolve, and desire. And that can be part of coaching. And that can be part of the players' desire and ability, too. But all in all, despite the short, you know, the misgivings by the Celts throughout the series and throughout the season, they performed very admirably, considering that in many ways they were shorthanded, too. You know, we have Perkins in Game 7. And you still got Garnett, who's getting old. And you've got Rondo fighting his back spasms. And you got Pierce, who's just in and out of grimaces. This team is certainly not 100%. But for them to have pushed the Lakers the way they did, very admirable. And this is just one reason why I think the Lakers-Celtics rivalry is more than legitimate. It is one of the great rivalries in sports. Because for every yin, there's a yang. For every hit, there's another hit. For every punch, there is a counterpunch. That is what makes this rivalry so great. And I tell you, Game 7 was just the culmination of all the competitiveness we've ever seen between the LA Lakers and the Boston Celtics in 60 years of professional basketball. It truly was a joy to watch, and I'm glad to have been a part of it. And I'm glad that the Celtics fans, well, weren't completely denied, and I'm glad they weren't necessarily embarrassed. I mean, in a sense that they, in this Game 7, they performed much harder. They gave the Lakers a great run. Yes, they just basically ran out of energy at the end, but it doesn't mean they were bad. I mean, they were bad in certain areas. Ray Allen can't shoot. Why are you running plays for him? You know, that's just one idea. Why don't you give the ball to Paul Pierce more? Doesn't make sense. But still, their defense was always tough throughout the whole game, and you know, they just kind of just started getting a little late. They started getting a little bit sloppy with it. Then they started fouling and that sort of thing. And before you knew it, it was all set. It was all over. And the Lakers emerged. And now they will stay emerged for quite a while. Boy, and I tell you, it wears you out. You know, you think about this game, these matchups, and all the players who play, you know, whether it's Kobe Bryant, Derek Fisher, and Pau Gasol, and obviously the star of Game 7, Ron Artest. Lamar Odom, we had a tough series, but he did pretty well in Game 7. Even the little guys like Sasha Vujacic and Shannon Brown, who had some great plays, electric plays in Game 6. It was all just a team effort, I think, all the way around. But then, it wouldn't have really amounted to much if the team they played did not provide the competition, and the Celtics did every bit of that. With the big three of Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. Now, Allen had a tough series, but his defense on Kobe Bryant had been consistently good, and he really turned Kobe Bryant into a jump shooter, and he really did make him look like a bit of an ugly shooter throughout the series. And it's not just Game 7. I mean, this had been going on throughout every game in the series. Kobe never truly had his way with the paint. Never. Never did. And I owe that to the Celtics and their good shooting guard defense, whether it's Ray Allen or his teammate Tony Allen coming off the bench. They both did a great job defending Kobe. Just shadowed him. They stayed with him. They bodied him. They just didn't let him be him. They didn't give him the space that he usually likes. And I think that was really helpful. And then you have, well, the bench mob for the Celtics. You had guys who were bigger stars at home than they were on the road. But you had guys like Big Baby Glenn Davis. You had folks like the aforementioned Tony Allen. And let's not forget the sort of unsung hero, Nate Robinson, who had a really big game in Game 4. Although, that was probably the extent of his greatness in this series. All told, it was a really hard-fought effort by the Celtics as a whole, and well-coached, too. I mean, for example, when you're going into Game 4 and you were saying, Well, boy, why don't they go to the bench more? And then Rivers does exactly that, going with a smaller bench, knowing that there is a bad matchup with Andrew Bynum not playing and Odom just being used as a sieve out there in the paint. Went with the bench and stayed with him well into the fourth quarter. Risky move, but a good one. And I'm so glad that he went out of the box. It just had it all. You know, you had a response to every single challenge. And so fittingly, for two teams as well matched as these, a Game 7 was the only logical conclusion to a series like this one. It was great. And, you know, I went into the game, I said, well, it's not going to be that big a deal if the Celtics win. And then when they were up by 13, I completely bailed on my own theory. It's natural. Natural because, hey, it's the Celtics. And if you're a true Laker fan and have grown up with this team, there's no way you could ever truly accept the Celtics beating you. It just doesn't work. So that is the tribute and the story of this series. Just two great teams, two great cities, two great franchises just going toe-to-toe and staying hot. And, you know, this could be the end. It could be the end for the Celtics. The big three could be breaking up. Allen may be moving on. Doc Rivers may be moving on. And the bench guys, who knows? Certainly the Lakers are going to be different next year. We don't know if Fisher's going to re-up. We don't know if Phil Jackson's going to be back. We just don't know. And it will be a very different basketball landscape in a couple years. So I get the feeling this is going to be it for a while. Maybe for 10, 20 years before we see these two teams meet in the finals. And that's what makes it so special. Because, you know, with greatness, there can't be a lot of it or else it's not great. If we're just used to it, there's nothing great about it. I think part of what makes greatness great is the rarity of it. If everybody could do the same thing, how is that great? Everybody's doing the same thing. But what greatness is standing out above the rest. And the Lakers do this time after time, at least in recent years. And the Celtics have done this over the last 3 years. And together, they've provided a very, very solid, legitimate, and long-lasting rivalry in the sense that you're going to remember these two teams and what they did many years after the fact. And that truly is a sign of a good team. Think back to like 1978. Do you remember any of the guys on the Washington Bullets and then the Seattle Supersonics? If you do, good for you because you're a really good NBA fan. And I know some of the guys, but the casual fan may not remember a lot of those players. But think about the 80s. Then you've got like the Sixers, the Celtics, the Bulls, and the Lakers. And you just had a lot of names that you could remember. And so we have that continue here with this rivalry here. Because, and part of that is owed to the fact that the team stayed together for these 3 years. But many classic battles, regular season and postseason. And so it really culminates in just a brilliant display of round ball. And it ends with L.A. victorious. And again, for L.A., the 16th championship, that puts them only one behind the Celtics with their who has 17. They have played a major game of catch-up, and they are right up on the door now. You know, when I was growing up, Celtics had 16 championships. The Lakers had barely had, you know, 5 plus 6, 11. Only 11. And now, we're up to 16. It's pretty crazy. So enjoy these moments while you can. And that goes for Celtic fans, too. Because we just don't know what's going to happen the next couple years. Kobe's not getting any younger. And who knows how healthy Bynum will be next season or if he's even going to be on the team. There's just no telling what's going to happen in the years to come. This is our moment. This is our time. And L.A., I salute you, the fans, and everybody for being there for this team throughout the season. And, you know, the city of Los Angeles shares a special relationship with this LA Laker team. And they have been for many, many years, generations even. So to have something like this go down, it is truly brilliant indeed. Celebrate. That's all for this show. Thanks for listening, and we will probably settle back into some more of the little things as we return here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio. Stay tuned for that. But until then, congratulations and have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you next time.